Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
All right, and welcome to another episode of Boots, Balls, and Bras. I'm here with Eartha Pond and Farrah Williams, and I'm Beck Smith. This week we've got all kinds of things. Nothing new. We're going to be talking about the WSL here in England, but also the Women's Championship, because that often gets overlooked. International Matches Week and the UEFA New Nations League has been launched, so we'll be chatting about that. Right. Let's kick it off. WSL here in this country. What was your favorite game, Eartha?
I think for me, obviously, it had to be United versus Chelsea. It's always good to see where the league's getting. Chelsea's always being at the top. United sort of pushing for that top three finish and hopefully trying to get into those top two places. Unbeaten record, everything to sort of fight for in terms of the new kids on the block.
Yeah.
And it didn't really disappoint. I think in terms of the result, yes, Chelsea came through and just showed their dominance of where they've been in terms of the league and where they, I guess, aspire to continue to be in sort of stretching and challenging those other teams. But yeah, United put up a good show, tested Chelsea at times in moments. But yeah, that was the game that I guess everyone had their eyes on to see how that impacts the league table. And good to see goals from Lauren James still doing well, start of the season. Drake.
I know. What I was going to ask you about, man.
Well, like, there has
so
to be
Manchester
a time.
United lost 1-3 at home against Chelsea. But I was, Mary Earps didn't have the swag.
I know, but there was other things that we were celebrating. It was her 150th appearance in the WSL. So
was she stressed? Was she nervous?
I don't really know, but maybe we have to get her on and ask that question.
Yeah,
I think now in a good way that they conceded against Chelsea and we've got that sort of clean sheet out the way, and it's again time for her to sort of step up, and maybe going away on international duty this week will help to sort of consolidate her. What was I going to say? Her confidence. But yeah, she'll be back.
She'll be back.
I know you say, like, it's interesting you say, like, Man United tested Chelsea at times. Mm-hmm. I think that's still the problem in the WSL. I still think Chelsea and Arsenal are way above any other team in our league at the minute. And, you know, we spoke about United going into that game unbeaten, having not conceded a goal, and that would have been their test. It just shows the gap's still there. Mm. I think that the teams that Man United have beaten in the build-up to this Chelsea game, they was expected to be, in my opinion. Mm. And it just come down to, you could just see the quality, the decision-making in the game. And I'd watched Man United a week previous against Everton, and I spoke about that game on the pod about the decision-making in the final third is a difference between the likes of Man United, Everton, Manchester City, Tottenham, for example, and Chelsea and Arsenal, who are way above in terms of that, you know, that the final decision in those big moments, because that was the difference. Those decision-makings actually won Chelsea that game. The quality of decision-making in those big moments won them the game. The gap's still big.
And in terms of, I guess, the WSL as a product, that's where we want to get to. You look at Chelsea, you look at Arsenal. Throughout the game, they're going to play good, consistent football. And yes, other teams will take points off of them because of moments of brilliance. But actually, that consistency for majority of the game to compete is not there for the rest of the league. I think that's what it is in terms of the difference, that the rest of the league are not competing for long periods of the game and playing, I guess, attractive football on both sides. And there's not one side that's really dominating. Mm. Whereas when you, I guess, are looking forward to Arsenal, Chelsea, because that's where we see, I guess,
the top two,
but also just tactically and where you're going to need, like Farrah said, that cutthroat, like finishing, passing, like breaking the lines. Like if you don't have that, you're not going to win the game.
Because even Arsenal-Leicester, the 4-0 game, Arsenal were so dominant, but made mistakes, were sloppy at times. I think in possession, I thought they were sloppy at times. They gifted Leicester chances. The difference is Leicester can't convert.
Yeah.
So Arsenal can afford to make those sloppy mistakes in moments to give Leicester a chance, because they're just going in gear two against opposition like Leicester. And it's difficult for any of the teams in the league to compete, I believe, with Chelsea and Arsenal.
So I also think, too, that the difference between the good teams and the best teams are the depth in the bench. So, you know, you look at, I mean, I still, when I'm watching games, I'm still thinking, my God, how are they still running? How did we used to do that, literally? But they still have make those subs that come in and make a change, and it can impact the game, where you keep that consistent level high. And the Leicester Cities, they don't have it. You know, even Everton arguably doesn't have it either. And I think that that's a big difference as well for the full season long.
And I think not just the physiological side, obviously psychology, I think the top teams, that's where they have that sort of challenge. So if they're not being stretched and challenged domestically, actually, when you talk about in Champions League, those that are competing in it, where they're sloppy, like against Leicester and Arsenal, those they will be punished against those better teams. So how do they keep their eye on the ball, both domestically and also when they go into those sort of cup competitions such as the Champions League? That's what the top teams are looking to do in terms of management and developing their players.
Like, and that's where they're at, aren't they now? Yeah, they are. They're looking to develop and to compete on that level. One of the things that really bothered me about this weekend was just looking on the Everton site and seeing that their game was cancelled against Tottenham because of a waterlogged pitch. And I looked at their Instagram, and the first comment was this girl named Isabel Callahan, and she said, "Bruv, waterlogged pitch in the WSL is bad." And I'm like, is that still literally happening? We're talking about Chelsea, Arsenal competing in the Champions League.
Mate, that is you two's team here that you say is going to finish third. Champions League team getting waterlogged pitches. They can't be playing in the Champions League with waterlogged pitch.
It's definitely embarrassing. I think especially it's a new ground that they've moved to. Exactly. They've just had their first game the other week at that ground. And then to see that, it's like, okay, you're meant to be making a step up. So something's gone wrong there in terms of, I don't know, pitch maintenance, because that shouldn't be happening, especially so early on in the season. Like, winter's just started.
One day of rain, and that's it.
So I'm sure some eyes would have been sort of, rolling at that
The referee
point.
Would have had to have called that game off though, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
I mean, clearly the pitch isn't in any condition to play the game. But yeah, it would have been a nice, tasty game, as I said.
Yeah.
Everton, Tottenham for that 6-1.
I was really looking forward to that second, third place team.
So just in terms of, like, I don't know, Bex, you might know, in terms of like officiating, like how bad does the pitch have to be? Or is there a specific standard now in the WSL, in the top leagues, that in order for a game to go ahead? Because if we look back to Bickensfield, that game was on.
Where was that? What's
Bickensfield? Chelsea. When we played for Chelsea women, their old football ground.
Honestly, we played on anything and everything.
Literally, the ball wouldn't even roll. So
remember the Charlton game? Charlton Everton?
Yeah, it was literally not
moving.
It
was a cup game.
It weren't even moving.
Actually, Everton shouldn't have played it, because if it was a decent pitch, we'd have beat Charlton at the time. And we played and we lost 1-0. But this pitch was like, is that when you did your ACL work?
Yeah, you have to
horrendous.
Literally just...
The pitch, the ball wasn't even rolling.
Mm-hmm. You did your ACL on a pitch that technically should have been called off.
Yes.
Wow, how did that sit with you?
That's how pitches were. So I didn't even think of it. Yeah. Just normal. It's just all right.
That's so sad, man.
I know, right? It was just like, remember, tactically, we just had to keep it off the ground. Like,
had to keep the ball.
Just keep the ball, like, floating it in.
And clearly, Charlton were better at doing that. They had, Pauline Cope, who could kick the ball long to Carmaine Walker, and they had runners off. Whereas Everton at the time, we was a ball playing team. And so we found it difficult and lost the game. I mean, when I went from, say, you're playing the competitive team, so I remember being at Everton, and it was the mentality was about winning and being competitive. You go to Arsenal and Liverpool, and you know these teams are wanting to fight for whether it be FA Cup, Carabao Cup, whatever it is, or what it's not even the Carabao Cup, Continental Cup, or the league. So you go from that environment and that mentality where like you dig players out because you want the very best, and you're trying to like that competitiveness in training, to a team. When I did go to Reading, some players mentally struggled with that because they wasn't used to that kind of communication or those kind of demands. So what happens if you are a top player, and this is what I'm saying, if you go to a Leicester and you get like one or two top players, because even when Emma Mitchell at the time and Dan Carter come to Reading, they really struggled with their communication to players, because they just, all they knew being at Arsenal, growing up at Arsenal, was winning. Coming to Reading, where actually losing isn't such a bad thing, even though people wanted to win, accepting losing was easier. Accepting losing when you play in an Arsenal team wasn't easy. It wasn't acceptable, because you were there to win. So what I'm saying is that these players, you get one or two going into a lesser team, for example, if they go to a, like a, I'm just going to use Leicester because they're down at the bottom, Brighton, it's really difficult to shift that mentality of the players in the right way. Even though your intentions are in the right way, sometimes it's not perceived that way.
Yeah, but I had the same issue. Sorry to jump in there, but I had the same issue playing in the U.S. in the college environment at Duke, where we were, you know, one of the top teams in the country, to them playing with the New Zealand national team that had the guitar on tour, and more importantly, they just wanted to have fun. And like Jane behind me, just remember the guitar, don't you?
Yes,
you wish you had a guitar on your tour,
oh,
didn't you?
Mate.
But like just the singing and the kumbaya shit, I was like, come on, guys, you know. And then actually taking that mentality. So I'm so glad I did have that, the balance. Because,
what, the guitar?
Yeah, the guitar too, because I realized I really can't sing when I thought I could. No, but it's just that it's nice to know that there's another way that you can like be involved in a team, mm-hmm. because then I don't think I would have chosen Wolfsburg when I came in 2009, because they were in ninth place out of 12 in the league. And the whole concept there was, we have to grow. Like, we're looking to win the league. We're looking to play Champions League. And we're looking for people that can bring in, that we can recruit, that we can build this mentality and this structure. So had I not played with New Zealand and sort of understood how to deal with players that were not all about winning all the time, and me, to also being from that, it is all about winning every single time because I'm American and we're going to win. I think it would have been a lot harder to have that like cultural shift.
That's what I mean. You get to that accept. You have to get to that level of acceptance as a player in terms of what you're playing with and what you're working with. But, and that's what I was able to do when I went to Reading. And it's difficult. You know, we had Jess Fishlock. We had top. Reading were trying to recruit top players. But what I'm saying, the problem in doing that, when you have such an imbalance in terms of like that winning mentality and what winning means to people that accept, honestly, it can either make or break the team. It can either bring them with you or completely divide.
Let me tell you, that is not happening in my world yet. And I'll give you an example. So in terms of like being a coach or a manager, like my expectations are so high. Like literally, I've done my badges from like 2004, meant to do my A-licence like really early. And I was like, I'm not going to do this because my expectations are so high. I remember in a summer camp, I was coaching the under nines team. I almost took them all off. Like I was shouting at them so much. I was like, there's going to be two players left on this pitch. And then I realised, this is not for me. So that's why when I went into teaching, my mentality was...
You took a breath.
I took a breath and I was like, all they need to do is enjoy it and make progress. So this is, I had to switch my mindset. But in terms of like competitions, I couldn't take none of the school teams.
She's not joking.
I promise you, I couldn't do none of, I couldn't coach none of the schools.
I felt the same way in my first game with the New Zealand national team. I'm like, we are a national team. We are representing our
country.
We're
not playing
that
guitar.
Your head,
those strings would have got smashed.
Right?
I'm not doing that.
It's like this close.
We are here to play football.
My teammate and I, another American, Simone Ferrara, now Carmichael, who was on the team, she went to Irvine, so she was from that mentality too. And her and I would just sit there like on the bus like with our hands clenched, like, can you put your guitar away?
Mate, can you remember Celebration Cup and just like five asides at like Charlton?
Losing.
Like,
we're
not losing. Do you know how fuming? We turn up on Sunday after training and would still be fuming from the end of training. Football play around session. And
but there's something to say about that, isn't there? Because it's a life lesson, you know, the winning mentality is important, but at the end of the day, what is the ultimate goal? And taking that into like the business world now, and you know, having transition where we all are now doing different things outside of just kicking a ball, you know, having that different culture of the winning mentality, being the best, but also making sure that you are bringing people along and you have a growth mentality and that it is about the learning and the journey. I think it's really important as well.
I'm still in therapy on that point. So you lot let me know when you get the answers, because I haven't found them yet.
All right. The other game I liked was the West Ham United Brighton. It ended up 4-5 to Brighton. Brighton was up 5-2 at one point. And that was an exciting game. Like sometimes I wish that should have been on the prime time
really
TV.
For goals, yes, for the quality of the game, no, in my opinion.
Don't we watch for goals?
I'm not again, it's a product, like, is that going to sell? You're going to look at it and you're going to be like, really, the goals were sloppy. Some of the goals that were conceded were really sloppy. It wasn't the most attractive game. It was great for Brighton to bounce back after an 8-0 defeat, but then to concede four goals, there's still something
that was a lot.
Quite not right there. But as you say, to get the 3 points for them would have been the most important thing, I'm sure, for West Ham. Very unlike West Ham to concede that many goals.
Well, I mean, that 9 goals in one game is just, that's a lot. Yeah, that a does lot. Feel
But
just
I get it
messy.
for somebody who's never watched a game before and likes, enjoys watching goals, Bex, like you.
I like
game.
Goals, man. I like goals. I didn't particularly love a lot of those goals.
I was going to say you're a defender.
I thought a few of them looked like own goals, but I'm not, yeah.
Goals wins games.
You know? It was a sloppy game.
Yeah, it was. I think moving on to the WSL 2 or the championship, because you mentioned that, Eartha, a couple times, and it is interesting because we talk a lot in this country about the WSL, the Barclays WSL, the top league, but really you need to have that pyramid and the player progression from, you know, grassroots into potentially academies, into a team that is a semi-professional environment, so that when they get into the WSL, there isn't that big of a jump. So both physically, but also mentally. And I work with a couple players that are playing in the WSL now. But what are your guys' thoughts on the WSL and to the championship?
My thoughts on it, like, it's a difficult one. I'm just going to go back to the WSL where we talk about product of team, right? Or branding of team. So Bristol, for example, in terms of the brand, you know, it's not an attractive name for any, you know, female player to want to go and play for.
Yep.
In terms of what they have structurally, they have a WSL1 structure.
So Bristol,
in the championship.
Just
so
time out, because Bristol's at the top of the league right now.
Yeah, and
they've
just been relegated out of WSL1. So what I'm saying about their structure going into championship is of WSL1 standard. And it always has been. They've always been a team with great structure, like from all the way through. But in terms of being able to get top players to go and sign based on the name, which is you know, Bristol, and people probably aren't too aware of, and probably being able to pay them a salary that is, you know, livable, is difficult. But that's why they'll end up coming straight back up from the championship. So they, for me, in my opinion, are too good for the championship in terms of where they're at in terms of their structure, but not quite good enough for WSL. And that's why they go up and down, and they'll be that yo-yo team. I mean, London City Lionesses, they've been looking good for the last few years. They've been
they're number two right now.
Well, they're second now, but they again have been pushing. They've got good investment. They had to take over Millwall Lionesses a few years back, but even last year they were really competitive and just fell away to Liverpool, who obviously are a bigger team and heavily recruited to try and get themselves back up. So,
and they did. They won the league and then went into the WSL.
Even speaking Southampton, you know, Marianne Spacey taking the team. I watched the first game of the season. They were away at Lewis, and just speaking to Marianne, and it's like, they've only just gone full-time professional in that league. So they're on a journey now in terms of, what does being professional look like? What does it feel like? How do I behave as a professional every single day? And they still don't know. And she's saying, I'm still trying to teach my players. She has them in pretty much all day. Like they do a full
all day. Every day?
Most days. I can't remember how many days she said, but in terms of the actual day, it's a full day. So it could be like 10 till 4 or 5. So it's a full day. Mm. But that's not how professionals should operate. Mm. You know, being a professional footballer doesn't mean to say you go and do a 9 till 5 job.
Thank goodness for that.
You know, no, as in the hours. It doesn't mean because you're professional and I'm going to give you a full-time contract that means you have to be in 9 till 5. You know, you might just have to go in and do your session or your recovery or whatever it might be. And that time, you'll learn how to manage that time. And I'm not sure when you first start out, because I remember when I went to Arsenal, we was pretty much in from 9 till 5. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's a waste of time.
So,
too,
yeah, they're learning.
It makes you
the
mentally
championship
tired.
That are trying to transition to being professional, they're on a journey now, and it's going to take time for these teams to understand what it looks like. But Eartha, you go more into it.
No, I was just thinking, and just touching on, I guess, Southampton, a few of their players that they've recruited are experienced players that have come from like Tottenham and come from other teams that have been in the WSL. So I guess they're leaning on them for their experience in terms of anchoring those clubs. Yeah. And then you have the new talent that's sort of coming through. And obviously you've got Marianne, who has been in and around the game forever.
She's a former player. Marianne Spacey, for those that don't know outside of the UK.
Legend.
Give us a little blip.
Absolute legend.
I just remember. She was the only player that I'd heard of. I remember Eartha was at Chelsea as a young kid. She was the only name alongside Rachel Yankee that I'd actually heard of, even though it was only a couple of years later. Obviously, Kelly Smith was the one that everybody was speaking about. But it was Marianne, the one that, and of course, she's a Chelsea fan, which made it even better for me as a kid growing up. She was in an Arsenal shirt, and honestly, I mean, Eartha, do you remember the FA Cup? We played in an FA Cup game against, so we were like, we was the league below them at the time. Chelsea, we was 14. Me and Eartha were 14 playing in the first team against an Arsenal team.
What team were you playing for?
We played for Chelsea. We got drawn to them in the FA Cup. And I mean, let me tell you, Arsenal were like the dominant team. Like, they had every good England player
in their
team.
And you two were 14 years old.
Well, let me tell you, I can't even tell you how many goals Marianne scored because I forgot, but we lost like 11-0. It was so demoralising at Beaconsfield, remember?
At Beaconsfield.
Honestly.
With a waterlogged pitch.
And Marianne was just like spraying balls, like, oh, it was just a joke. And then obviously you got Yanks there, like was just taking it.
Rachel,
like,
Yankee, yeah.
Yeah, Rachel Yankee. It was just crazy. So, yeah. It
so
was
Marianne Spacey is now the current coach of Southampton, who's in the championship. And they're at number three, sitting in third place right now after six matches behind Bristol City and London City. Bertha, you were going to say something?
No, I was going to say about Marianne. And obviously she's been involved in the England setup as well. So she's had some of that youth. She's seen the talent pool as well. So in terms of recruitment, really, really good. And then obviously we have Charlton, our old team. And
they're a bit disappointing though, Earth, do you not think?
Do you know what it is? So obviously Karen Hills is a manager who we used to play with, who used to play at Charlton, who was at Tottenham and has gone across. I think what it is there's a lot of players who, I guess, have been in and around WSL 1.
Yeah, that's why I'm disappointed that they haven't delivered. They've got good players though, Earth. Not even just like, they've got good players.
I know. So for me, I think it's a mentality thing.
Has to
it's
be.
A sort of, not necessarily I know I'm good, but they are good enough to be competing and should
for
be competing
sure.
consistently. But in terms of the product and clicking on the pitch, it's not happening as effectively as it should be. I know they've had a few changes. I know Eartha Cummins, the goalkeeper, she's moved on. So they've got a new goalkeeper. They've had a few injuries.
Yeah,
I know
got a couple of injuries.
Quite a few of them, about two or three, has done an ACL. Again, it's looking at training regime, like you said, are we training too much? Are we overloading? Like, what are the key things that we're trying to get out of that team? So, again, we always want to see those clubs who have that good history coming back up. So we have obviously Bristol, who Mary Drake Earps used to play for.
Birmingham. Like, they're literally. Like, I'm
Birmingham's
like,
at seven right now.
They've got great coaches. Like,
great coaches.
Darren Carter, right? Yeah. And Joe Potter's assistant. And Joe Potter's a very, very. I mean, she was a smart player, really intelligent. But in terms
former
of coaching,
Lioness.
Yeah, played with her as well, Reading, and to be fair, played with her Everton and Charlton. We pretty much followed each other everywhere.
Twins.
But she's a, in terms of her coaching, I mean, I remember doing my B with her years ago, her coaching, her ability to coach and deliver messages for players to understand is very good. So I don't know, beginning of the season, I was like, right, they're going to bounce straight back up. I genuinely believe that.
Well,
I think it's the structure, because we talk about Bristol, and the reason why I think they're top is because their structure's always been good. They've always had WSL1 structure, whereas Birmingham, the reason why they ended up getting relegated, because structurally from top to bottom was poor. We spoke last season about them getting changed in hubs and physios. Wasn't the physio room like a little hub, and they didn't have training pitches and facilities? And
it does affect
of course it does.
Your rhythm. But if you look now, they're one game behind. They have five matches. They have 7 points. And if they win that game, they'd be equal to Charlton, potentially, depending on the goal difference. So they could be at fourth place, really.
But they should be leading. Like,
you think they should be at the top?
Because
they've just come down from the WSL last season.
And they have good players. I know they lost players, but they still have good players. Like, they recruited good players. You know what's interesting in that league?
Coventry United is last place, number 12.
They went into administration last Christmas in WSL2, and they lost. Was it 11 points they dropped?
10 points deduction.
So they treated it as if it was still the men's Premier League.
Still like the Premier,
so crazy, because we don't play that many games. Mm-hmm. So it was. They got an investment, so somebody, a buyer that came in
from Wolves, a rival team, literally saved them.
They ended up staying up last game of the season. Wonder goal. Remember
wonder
Molly's goal?
Goal?
Remember, yeah. Wonder goal. And then you'd think maybe they'd kick on. Maybe, like, if he's true to his word, you know, want to invest and whatever, they would do that. And now they're sitting rock bottom without a point in the league.
They are. And at 19 goal deficit as
crazy,
well,
right?
Minus 19. That does not look very good.
I mean, 3 points could get them
into 12th place still, yeah.
We've got Sunderland and then Blackburn. Blackburn is an interesting one for me. Like, they've always had a good cluster of players. They've always, when it was sort of
they
north
were always
and south,
that club though.
They always
the
won.
Liverpool, Everton, United, that kind of players that didn't quite make it there.
Yeah.
They would always go to Blackburn.
Oh.
So if you couldn't quite get into
because
like Everton
the
at the time.
Because that's where it was.
Yeah, but it's not too far. Blackburn out from Liverpool is only like a 45 minute. Same for Manchester.
Yeah.
So players that really didn't quite make it at Everton. Remember, Liverpool, Blackburn would be. So in terms of recruitment, having
like,
players.
Was it Saffron Jordan
ability,
that he plays up front? Like, she's always been like top goal scorer.
Yeah.
She scores loads of goals.
Yeah.
She reminds me of, you know, when Kit Graham was at Charlton and she needed to make that move because she was just too good for that club. She's the same type of player. Like, she scores goals week in, week out. Even FA Cup against top oppositions, she will get you a goal. But she's just dedicated to
Blackburn or Friends.
Yeah. Do you know what the thing that you were talking about earlier made me think about the fact that if you are a top player, you're coming from the WSL and you come down into the championship, like there has to be a mindset that a mind shift where you do think I'm better than this. I'm almost too good for this. And I feel like players often do that, or they go from a top club to a, you know, maybe fifth, sixth place club in the league, that there's this sort of, I can take my foot off the gas pedal because I'm going to be so much better than them just because of who I am. When actually you really need to do the exact opposite. You need to work that much harder because it's, you don't have those great players around you.
I think it's a women's football thing. There's a lot of times where players are getting selected based on who they are, not how they've been performing. And that almost goes with them wherever they go. So when they drop down, they still feel like I should be playing. And that's why my motto of don't tell me, show me, is you've got to be able to show it every week. But because actually, from a management point of view, that's not being held in that regard, and players who maybe are not showing it every week but still are playing, then unfortunately, that's just something that we have in our game. So I think in terms of if you're not performing, get them out. Because if you're dropping down from the WSL down to the Championship, you should be driving that team.
Exactly.
Like, you should be the leader, but there's no accountability.
Remember when I was watching Tottenham and like Drew Spence was on that? Mm-hmm. And when you watch the game live, you do see a lot more, don't you? When you're in the stadium and you can watch the body language of players completely off the ball, or like I was so disappointed with her, and I don't mean to point her out, or because I think she's a fantastic player, and this past weekend she definitely stepped up as well, but not this past weekend, but previous one. But it was just like, you're coming from such a good team to this team to help Tottenham get to that next level. And it just felt like there was a frustration. She was frustrated with the players. Her body language was all like, it's everybody else's fault.
And it's difficult though, isn't it? You all know that. Playing with top players, you think this is where Tottenham are, right? Mm. So this is where you are arguing with me that they're a third place team. They're not, right? They're definitely not.
Are you sure though?
And what I'm saying is that somebody like Drew, that has been the quality and calibre of player she's been playing around in terms of her thought process when she's playing the game, is probably two or three steps ahead of these Tottenham players right now. So what she has to do is take a step back, and her thought process, not that it needs to slow down, but she needs to be aware of the players that are around her. Mm. So I would get that frustration. I would understand it. She now needs to adapt her game to the calibre of players around her.
That's it.
So that her frustration levels are less than what they are right now.
And lead in a different way, right? Because, you know, even the work rate, that can be something that, all right, so I'm not going to get the ball every time at my feet or in the area that I want it to, but at least I can drive a leadership mentality that we're going to work really hard. And, you know, so in other ways. But yeah, I think it's an interesting one anyway, between WSL and the Championship. Having players come up and down. It's a very, very important league. And I think it's quite rare as well, because if you look across the rest of the world in the women's game, that second league down is a major issue for a lot of leagues, because it's not, the quality and the standard is not good enough. And so the fact that the Championship has good quality here, I think is super important to keep that competitiveness and to keep them at a good enough level that when they do jump to the top league, they can play in it and internationally play as well.
Mm. I think that we have to embed the foundations at that Championship level. That's what we're not doing in terms of like the mentality, in terms of the work rate. Like, that's not stuff that actually we're waiting for players in the WSL to come down and teach us. Actually, from a coaching point of view, we have to start threading that stuff through, because as we see, there's already a gap in the WSL. And if we leave the bottom team to then rely on the players that are coming down from the WSL, the gap's always going to be there. So
yeah.
Managers, A license, B license, you guys, coaches, because unless I'm coaching like Barcelona, I'm not being a coach.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Over to you.
All right, so that leads us actually really quite nicely into our halftime team talk this week, which is all about managers and what's been going on in, here in the WSL, but more broadly, what the expectations are. Let's start with Hope Powell walking away technically from Brighton after an 8-0 loss 2 weekends ago. Thoughts on Hope Powell? I mean, you guys have known her for so long. Farah, you've known her personally as well for so long. How did that make you feel?
Gutted, if I'm honest. I think, you know, certainly somebody that I grew up with as a player, very good manager. I know people have had their differences with Hope in terms of her management styles, but she's always been somebody that I've trusted in, believed in, has always been able to develop players at all levels. And I think she's certainly put Brighton, like she did with England, in a really good position. So she wouldn't leave a club or country like she did with England in a worse position than when she took it over. I just feel like she probably believes that, you know, the club in terms of the investment, is it still there? Is it going to help them compete? I know they had like a 7-year plan where they wanted Brighton to be competing for Champions League, but you can't just have that on paper. You need the investment, as we spoke about. They've got the structure in place for sure. I think they've got one of the best structures in WSL1. And I know that that's something Hope would have wanted to do first, get that structure in place and build on it in terms of them bringing players in. But they've lost a lot of players in the summer. I haven't really, you know, brought players in to fill those spots. And she maybe feels now it's a time to leave it in a good place, allow somebody else to try and move it on. And she's done her stint in terms of coaching. I feel like she deserves something
so
different,
long,
you know,
man.
Whether she goes above and starts to look at that type of role or media now that there's opportunities in that. But certainly somebody I'd like to still see in the game with the knowledge and experiences she has.
Yeah.
But it's a big loss for the game. Really big loss.
I remember playing against England a long time ago.
Did you scared of her?
I was so... Did I tell you that? Have I told you that?
No. I just knew that I was coming.
She was not even my coach and I was scared of her on the sideline. She had these big dreads and she was just so herself. She was so different from all the other coaches I'd ever seen or played against on national teams. And she was so loud and never smiled. And, you know, having met her now after, but maybe she cut her dreads and it made less scary, but like knowing her now and on a personal level, like what a nice human.
That's what frustrating as you say
such
that
such a
Bex,
football head isn't
because,
she
because you say nice but like I don't feel that she I always used to say to Hope, let people see you, like when you're a manager, like she wanted to be like a boss.
She was a boss.
But as you say, you've met her outside of football and so many players was like, why weren't you like that when you managed us? But I think you do have to be different, but I wish that people did see her humans, like her personality outside of the game, because as you mentioned, what a lovely person she is, and certainly has had a huge, huge impact on my life.
And really tough, huh? She was a tough cookie. She just did not care. She said what she felt. She was staunch in her beliefs.
I think for me, like going back to it, it's about management, isn't it? That's what you're there to do. You're there to do a job. And if in any other job, if you're not doing the right thing, then we need results. And I think we touched on it last week around what's the expectation, especially with the transition of a lot of the men coming into the women's game. It's a results business. Like they're there to win games. They're there to build the product of the club. And I guess that's the decisions that they've got to make. And I guess for Hope to step away, she most probably had in her mind that she can no longer, like Farah said, contribute towards where that vision wanted to go to. But as I said, the results speak for themselves. And if you're not producing on the pitch, same like players, they're not going to be start, they're not going to play. So as a manager, if you're not doing the job, I guess it's about really good being reflective around where you're at and where it is actually your job want to go to and where it is that you want to be. So I think like Farah said, it's important most probably with her experience to still be part of the game in some capacity. I saw her in the Euros doing some stuff for UEFA, so potentially something at even a more sort of global stage. But yeah, I don't know if I could see her back in club football.
No, definitely not in a
WSL anytime soon. I think, and I'm not too sure if that motivates her. I think it has to be something new where she's back learning, she's back in the deep end, like trying to work it out, because she's done the pro license, she's done the international stage, she's done the club level. Like, what's next?
Yeah.
Like,
what, I think what that's what it is, if you're right. What motivates her now? And I don't think that Was she that? Did she get to a stage where, you know, she's not motivated to go on the grass with them and develop anything? Probably. She probably got to that part now where she needs something, where she's challenged in a different way now.
It's hard work. It's real. I mean, that's why I never wanted to coach. It was like standing on the sideline in the same capacity, but not being able to kick the ball. No thanks. Yeah. But she did some work when I was at FIFA as well. And I can imagine her in like a more strategic role for how do you, you know, grow and develop coaches worldwide. But speaking of, you know, other coaches, Leicester City, Lydia Bedford was sacked. After zero wins but 0 points and just a horrendous start to the season. And Willie Kirk, we all know him. He was the previous Everton coach. He took over as a director of women's football at City in the summer, and he's now stepped in as the interim coach.
It's interesting because they took Lydia away from the national. She was in the national setup with the younger squads. And she initially
what was she in? Like under 17?
I think it was under 80, under 17 or 18.
England,
yeah, national team coach. Mm-hmm. And the FA actually allowed her to go and do that role. It was potentially just going to be like a short-term thing for last season. And then depending on if she wanted to stay on, then they were going to give Lydia that option. Obviously, keeping them up, they only had to beat, I think it was... They beat Villa, didn't they? They won only a couple of games last season under her, enough to keep them up based on the points. And so she got a contract with them. But the point is that she then didn't strengthen the squad any more than what it was last year. And they scraped through last season. Mm. And we said only 2 weeks ago that it was between them and Reading. Because likewise, I think if Reading was to have lost that game to Leicester, could Kelly Chambers have been... given the sack, probably, because that's the importance now of staying in WSL1. But it's interesting they've let her go so soon. I mean, what, they're five, six games in. They never really recruited to the level they needed to. They did start to look like they were playing a style of play. They looked like they had a better identity this year than they did last year, that's for sure. I certainly thought they were more competitive in games. They had a tough run of games. They played Arsenal.
Yeah, they did.
They played Man United only weeks previous. So they haven't had the easiest. They played Everton, I think. So they haven't had an easy running of games.
Yeah.
I think in terms of sacking her this early and not allowing her to play the teams that are in and around Leicester that she should be beating or at least competing with before then making that decision, I thought it was a bit strange. But it goes back to now. It goes back to now. Like, what is the expectation of the clubs or the people above in terms of their women's team, the product of it, and wanting them to stay in the WSL1?
And I think just on that, I think obviously Heskey's assisting Willie, and again that transition of men's players coming across into the women's game, really, really important. But I just don't think the quality of football. I've watched some highlights of them doing stuff in training, and for me it's just the basic stuff. That's not a WSL product, and I'm not saying the players don't have the potential to do it, but I don't know if the demand is there. And maybe someone like Willie Kirk coming in, who has that demand and has had it at other WSL clubs, to be able to embed that in his team, I think will help in terms of them taking it to another level. I think the difference with Lydia, I think what the aspirations for her is she wanted to be on the grass a lot more regularly than just on an England camp. Mm-hmm. So to be able to be in that club environment day in, day out, being with players for her own development, that's what she wanted to do. But in terms of what the product that was being produced, we've got to be honest, that's not WSL standard. And I think they do have it in them, but it has to be demanded week in, week out. Whether they're losing, like I said, and being happy with losing, but the quality that's being produced as a result of losing
wasn't good enough.
It's not good enough.
And I mean, there is a huge difference between under 18 players and internet or the WSL. But one of the things that I don't like about men's football, and I would say a lot of elite sports in general, is, you know, a coach gets a run of bad games and gets sacked. But we all know, we've all been on teams, we've all been in classrooms, we've all been in work environments. It takes a while to build a culture. It takes a while to find connections between players. Sometimes it even takes a while to find the right starting team for different and the right role for each of the players. And that can evolve over time and over a season. And I just don't agree with, after 7 games into a season, and as you said, hasn't even played teams that they could be competitive with, to be firing someone that early. And then Willie Kirk was also fired from Everton, was it 2 years ago, two seasons ago? I also thought that he didn't get a fair run to really build a culture and to build the team that you want. Because it takes time. You know, you come into a team and they play a certain way and there's a certain vibe and there's a culture. And if you want to impose that, it takes time.
But I think in the women's game, sometimes that has been the problem in terms of people are not willing to take risks. Mm-hmm. They're comfortable in staying and keeping the same management side. So that's where they get comfortable. Actually, I'm not really going to be sacked. I don't really need to be on my A game because I have a period of time. For me personally, you have to turn up and do the business. That's what you're getting paid to do. Yes, there's a period in terms of settling, but I think sometimes we have been a bit complacent. We've seen definitely back in the day a lot of managers been in place for like 10, 15
years. Yeah.
And again, you look at that not just on the pitch, but in terms of the board and from the governance point of view, how are those relationships developing? Are they comfortable? What's the expectation? And you see the bigger teams, like we go back to it, like Arsenal and Chelsea, they have an expectation from the top down to the bottom. They want that product to continue going in the forward direction. And if it's not, they'll get somebody else who can. So that's where I'm talking about. Yes, they're going to show those lower games like Leicester, but it's putting pressure on those clubs that you need to invest because this is the product.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to show what it looks like when you lose 4-0 to Arsenal on BBC.
And if you
want to
be involved in this conversation, you have to, from a top level, invest further down. And when we talk about TV rights and all the other stuff in terms of the funding, it has to come down to WSL, to Championship, to grassroots, to be able to produce it, to keep up with that quality of play. Mm. And if we don't do it, you get the sack. Simple as.
No, I agree. Look, it's a results business now, isn't it? It's full-time professional. And so these clubs that are investing heavily into their women's team now are going to want results. And if you're not getting them, the likeliness is you're going to get the sack. But it's an interesting one, as I say. It's interesting. I don't know. I just think the gap's so big between... I get it. If it's Chelsea-Arsenal and you're not getting the results and you go on like a two-year where like Chelsea and Arsenal haven't won trophies...
And you've recruited top international players
or like a Manchester City or Man United, because they're the teams that are investing. And if they don't finish in that Champions League spot, you start to ask the questions. A little bit more different between the rest of the pack, because I just think the gap's so big in terms of what is the expectation of the club. Like, what does the manager have to do in order to keep their job there? It's difficult because no one wants to go there. No one wants to go and play. You look at the Leicester, they've got a lot of young players. Yeah. Maybe that was Lydia that wanted to do that, but they do. It's an interesting one. And look, I'm sure there'll be plenty more ins and outs in the women's game going forward.
Yeah, super interesting topic. Moving on to what's coming up this week, we've got the international window beginning on Friday the 11th and Saturday the 12th. So there's some top matches coming up. We've got USA playing Germany, so number one playing number three. England plays Japan, number four versus number 11. And we've got France playing Norway, 5 versus 12. Obviously, in the top of these conversations must be the New Zealand Korea Republic game, right? That was your guys' choice to put this on the list, wasn't it?
Yeah, with the guitar.
Leave your guitar behind. But they're playing at home in Christchurch, my home city. Australia playing Sweden, so 13 playing number two. England v Japan, what are your thoughts? Nobbs and Hemp are injured.
No, again, it's always good for me. I always like to see how England are progressing. I guess it's a natural thing from looking at from a week to week domestic stuff and how does that transition into our national game, obviously being European Championships and with the World Cup so close next year. It's just about tracking and seeing where there are any gaps or where we are strengthening or how we're trying different things. So I guess for me, it's always nice to see England and then the rotation of players, a few new players coming in.
Because they've qualified, haven't they? They've qualified for the World Cup. Mm-hmm. So they can play more players.
So they
players.
Can play new things. And for me, it's always about learning and having Serena as our coach. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't want to go into management, I like to see, she's a former teacher, how she's transferring that into football. So, yeah, I just love watching her and watching the game.
Nice.
No, I agree. I think it's good. I think I was on a placement with the England under 23s last year with Mo Marley. And it was an interesting one because that part of the development in terms of the games and the structure around that wasn't as professional as they've now made it, having won the Euros in the summer. So that group of players now is even more important to the senior team and Serena. So Serena had a lot of input last year, communication. So she was constantly communicating with Mo Marley about, are players ready? You know, are they ready for the Euros? Are they ready for the squad? And obviously those conversations are happening quite regularly. I think since the Euros, and obviously we have a year build now until the World, or we did prior to winning the Euros, a year build. I think for Serena, she really wanted them to see that there was that step from 23s into the seniors and that they were being looked at. And I think it's been the way they've done it. We've seen Jess Park meet up with the squad in the last camp, didn't actually quite get any minutes, but then she went back to the 21s so she could get more regular international minutes, which I think is important that they get that. And then they brought two new players in from the 23s in Katie Robinson and Maya Letizia.
Yeah.
So I think it's important. I know that Jess Park has been recalled due to injuries, but I think it's important that these young players actually see that they are being looked at and there is a chance of them going to camp. And actually going into camp will make them realise where they're actually at in their development. Because sometimes when you're playing regularly in a WSL 1, you play regularly in the 23s. So you start every game for the 21/23s and you think that you're a senior player. And then you go to camp and realise actually the gap between WSL 1...
Big pond, even to very big pond.
Even to international under 21
yeah.
to then even go up to the senior, it's a big gap. Yeah. And it, you know, there's a route to that unless you're, you know, unique, like someone like Lauren James who can make that jump.
Yeah.
But, you know, the rest of them have to go on that development pass. And I like the way it's being used. At the minute.
It's so important because these players don't come out of nowhere, do they? They don't just come into the WSL.
But even someone like Gabby George has also been called in. I know she's been in around the squad as well previously.
An interesting one, that though.
And now she's, I know the strikers have gone out, but they brought in some defenders. Mm. But again, just from an insight point of view, I know that the amount of detail that gets sent from the 23s to the seniors,
crazy.
You would not believe there's at least 2-3 players in each position, like coming from the structures
so
underneath.
Good.
Effort, trust me, try working in it, try going, and like Mo Marley is so detailed, so very good in terms of management, in terms of like those details you're talking about. When I was there, I'd be working from when I woke up in the morning, 7:30 in the morning till gone midnight. And I'm like, Mo, do I get a day? Like genuinely the work and graft she puts in into developing. And it's no surprise that Mo Marley has developed the amount of players she has because she's so diligent in everything that she's so good.
Is she a Virgo?
She's Aquarius.
She's
one of me. She's an Aquarius. Oh, there you go. But yeah, she's so good. So yeah, in terms of like sending that over, like she would constantly, I mean, as I said, I was in camp, you'd get Serena calling and I'm wanting to know day to day how the 21s
But that's
doing.
Interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, she really does make Serena Wiegman look good. All these great players that are coming through, but the hard graft and the work does start from the youth national teams and that grassroots. I really like Maya Letizia coming in from Guernsey, from the Channel Islands. That's a fun story, isn't it? Yeah. 25 years later after Matt Letizia, even though they're not related, but I thought that was quite cool. She used to have to fly to England because of the lack of opportunities on the island. So that's quite fun. All right, so that wraps up our halftime team talk. On to second half. But moving on, because this has been huge news that UEFA has announced a Nations League. And this is really interesting because when I was at FIFA, we were looking at doing some kind of international Nations League as well on a global scale. So I did like the first workings or drawings up of a Nations League, a global one. And let me tell you, it is very, very complicated. So just to go through, what is this, if you guys haven't heard, it's going to be starting in autumn of next year. It's going to be played from then until the spring. And it really is a Nations League. So it's national teams competing against each other in three different tiers. You have 16 teams in League A, 16 teams in League B, and then 19 in League C. And that's all according to your national ranking. They then play in mini tournaments. And then depending on where they end up, they can get promoted or get relegated. And it will also serve as a tournament for the qualifiers for the Women's Euros and for the Women's World Cup, which is huge because that qualification process used to take 2 years for UEFA. So I don't know what you guys think about it. I have tons of thoughts, but I'll let you guys go first. What was your thoughts when it first got announced?
I just thought more games in the calendar.
But are they taking out friendlies with that? Because they do with the men, right? So the men have cut the friendlies to try and make it more competitive, right?
Yeah. So the interesting thing about it is that the international match calendar, which FIFA runs and develops is the calendar that allows for national team matches to be played, which means that legally the clubs have to release the players to play international matches. So back when I was playing, like when I first started at Wolfsburg, New Zealand would just have matches outside of these windows that we're having. And so me as a player, the club didn't have to release me because there was no legal need for them to do so. So I was in the middle of, do I go play against Japan with New Zealand or do I play against Bayern Munich when we're trying to qualify for Champions League? So it's a terrible situation to be in. So that's why the calendar is so important. So what's happened is FIFA hasn't actually published a calendar after 2023, which is crazy if you think about it, because that means that you can't plan as a national team or a confederation post that. So what UEFA's done is they've said, we're just going to do our own thing and we're going to plan our own calendar. And then FIFA will now obviously have to work around this calendar. So what
political,
I think,
right? It's amazing. Like, so money speaks, right? Politically. And I mean, I'm not in, I don't understand all of that, but it just sounds so like, yeah, politically, like competitive between UEFA, FIFA.
Yeah.
It's great. So long as the right thing's done, look, we want our, I think the national team, certainly in terms of the games being competitive, I know that you play teams that are more on your level. So for England, they won't have to play nations that they're going to tonk 20-0, which we don't want to see, because we want to see our, you know, our national team grow and develop and get better competing against the best. So in terms of that and the structure of that, I really like that. I like the fact that, you know, they're not going to be boring friendlies that nobody's interested in and the games, you know, more likely will be competitive. I'm excited by that.
Yep.
Is there going to be so many games that we're going to get a new record cap holder for England? Farrah, are you under pressure? Is your record under pressure? Because it seems like there's a lot of games coming up. And I think like previously there was like the games were sporadic. Now, within a year, we're having like 10, 15 games, right? So surely... You must be, are you sweating over there? Or?
Can you see?
What are you at? 172. What's the next one coming up?
Lucy?
I think Lucy, 100.
Steph Allen.
What are they at? 100.
Why are you holding
100. Yeah, just over 100.
Anyway, not as good as Farrah Williams, who's sitting right next to us.
No,
here
I hope it's good, but then, like, I tried to read up on it and understand it. And as you said there, I don't really understand how they then qualify for the Euros, because FIFA then saying around the World Cup qualifiers for 2025, they're jumping on the back of that, right?
Right.
So I don't really understand how that qualification then...
So basically in the...
You're bringing your FIFA hat, right?
This is the FIFA hat. But it's not easy. It's very complex, to be honest. It took me like a couple hours to go through the entire competition format and understand it. But in the League A, so you've got like ranking 1 through 16 playing each other. So like you said, it'll be more competitive. The top four that win that, so you have four teams in each group. The one that wins each group, there'll be four winners. They then go automatically into a qualified... So they'll be automatically qualified for the Women's Euros, for example. And then the four lowest ones will be relegated to League B. And then the second and third place in each of those groups will have to play a relegation promotion with League B and League C. So you could potentially have, 1 through 16, then 16 through 32,
and then 32. Yeah, I thought that.
On. So you could have from...
So the lower teams still have an opportunity to qualify, but... Yeah,
that's it.
They're not going to play tough opposition the whole way through qualification. Correct. They'll get an opportunity to have a one-off game against a top team to qualify.
That's it.
Does that sound
and
right?
So you'll have fewer matches where Germany is going and playing Uzbekistan, but potentially Uzbekistan, who's in League C, could potentially get into that promotion relegation tournament. And but the
so
top
it's basically
four
the FA Cup.
Yeah.
No.
That's how we understand it.
That's how we understand
it. For those of you who don't know the FA Cup, it sounds pretty similar to that.
Non-league get the chance to play against top opposition. Yeah. The top opposition don't play the earlier rounds. Yeah. They just get through and then it's FA Cup.
But what's really interesting about this too is like it will change the league, the world rankings for... Because UEFA has their own rankings for the European teams and FIFA has their world rankings. But what this means is that when you play, you'll be competing then for the ranking for next season. So you could go from, literally, 16th to 8th that quickly in the UEFA rankings. And that for me, especially where the women's game is right now, when you look at the world
rankings,
you're like, that's not accurate. Those
teams
are not accurate.
That's what I was going to say. Does that not give false, what's the word I'm looking for? No, in terms of that team.
Like
so what
it's
I'm saying is
a realistic representation of where they're at.
So what I'm saying, if you go all of a sudden, Wales, for example, who plays 24th, all of a sudden now they're 11th ranking based on this Nations League.
But it won't be like, world ranking. It'll be the UEFA. It'll be like the Nations League ranking.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay, I'm
but sensitive. It is. You're right. It is the same, like, because it will be the rankings for UEFA. So they'll be able to jump in that.
Because what I'm saying, you then go, say, for example, you go from a 24th to an 11th, right? Mm. You play an 11th ranked to a second ranked, right? You'd go, oh, that's quite a competitive game. The second rank absolutely whips him.
Yeah.
And people are going, well, you're meant to be ranked 11th in the rankings. It doesn't even...
That sounds like the WSL.
But I think because there's enough pre-qualifying games to get them to that position, so they still have to win a certain number of games to be able to even be in the position to be able to play. So they will have, you know, and that's where they said it's about based on meritocracy. So based on merit, based on how well you do, that's where your ranking goes. And it's changed. It can change every year. So it can be a fluctuation. For example, if Malta all of a sudden decides to invest millions of pounds or whatever their currency is, euros, I don't know, into the women's team, they could then jump up the rankings, but that's where they probably deserve to be, right? At that moment in time.
Yeah, but does that not then like give, like, so, because what I'm saying, say for example, the teams like Malta, they'd be playing teams around them, like Macedonia or somebody like, so they'd be playing that cluster of like European teams, or teams in Europe. And then say for example, the likes of like England and Germany and Sweden and Norway, right? That's really competitive. They could fall down the rankings based on their group compared to Malta, for example, Macedonia, who could jump up the rankings based on playing teams that are in and around them.
No, they still have to play. So it'll be the League A goes, the top four go up, and then from League B, the top four from League B go up into League A. So they're automatically in that group. And then the bottom four will go down, but then they still have to play promotion relegation.
Okay.
So they still have to play more games to be able to find that final ranking. So it's quite a long period. There's six games in that first, it's home and away, and then they play into the relegation, and then they'll have a final as well.
So Nation League came away six games in a year, then they have a tournament with like potentially eight games in a year, and then they have no qualifiers in between that.
So this will serve as the qualifier. So the first one is the Nations League, and then next year will be the qualifiers for the
World
Women's
Cup. Euro 20
first, isn't it? We switched the year, and then the Women's World Cup, and it will also be the qualifiers for the Olympics.
I was about to say, where does Paris fit into this?
So it does. It
wait there. So is it Euro 23, Olympics 24, World Cup 25? So we've had a tournament every year.
We need a camper van.
I'm invested.
We are on tour.
This is great.
This is what the pandemic's done, isn't it? Like, right? Everything's just like back to back, year after year tournament. Lovely, love it.
Plus, I can see Boots, Balls and Bras talent agency starting. We need to get some players under our belts.
And on that, we do have a team of the week that comes out. So catch us on social media and on our audio for that as well. All right. My goodness, another 5 hours of chatting, but that was a good one. Thank you guys very much for listening this week, and we look forward to chatting with you next week. Again, as always, send in all your questions, the topics you want us to talk about, what you think about Mary Earps. Is she Drake? Is she not Drake anymore? Eartha really wants to know. Right. Does anybody talk about football better than Pharrell Williams? I doubt it, but you let us know. And we'll see you next week. Thanks a lot.
Adios.
Bye. Ciao.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.